50 years ago today, President Dwight Eisenhower offered a radical new plan to the United Nations. In what became known as the Atoms for Peace Address, the president warned of an escalating nuclear arms race with the Soviet Union and proposed a way to slow it. The speech helped create a civilian nuclear industry, possibly speeding up the spread of nuclear weapons. Today and tomorrow, we'll examine the effects of the Atoms for Peace address. NPR's Christopher Joyce has this report.
In 1953, incoming President Dwight Eisenhower got a report from senior scientists. It warned that the Soviet Union might now think they were strong enough to deliver a nuclear knockout punch to the U.S. Eisenhower decided it was time to tell the public the grim truth about the dangers of the escalating Cold War. According to Leonard Weiss, a nuclear proliferation consultant and former congressional analyst, Eisenhower's speechwriter drafted a text under the heading Operation Candor.
And when he showed Eisenhower the draft, Eisenhower didn't like it at all because he thought that it had no element of hope in it.
Eisenhower and his advisors reworked the speech. He wanted more than candor. He wanted to give the world a strategy to slow the arms race. His solution was to limit the amount of uranium in circulation. On December 8th, the UN hall was jammed with dignitaries. Few knew what to expect. First, the president condemned the nuclear standoff with the Soviets.
To pause there would be to confirm the hopeless finality of a belief that two atomic colossi are doomed malevolently to eye each other indefinitely across a trembling world. To stop there would be to accept helplessly the probability of civilization destroyed.
He wanted the American people to understand that something needed to be done in order to prevent it from happening.
It is not enough to take this weapon out of the hands of the soldiers. It must be put into the hands of those who will know how to strip its military casing and adapt it to the arts of peace.
And his way of saying what needed to be done was this Atoms for Peace program.
Eisenhower's plan was this. The U.S. and the Soviets would deposit uranium into an international uranium bank. That would reduce their supply of bomb-making material. Any country would be able to draw on the bank for peaceful purposes when the world figured out what those would be.
Experts would be mobilized to apply atomic energy to the needs of agriculture, medicine, and other peaceful activities. A special purpose would be to provide abundant electrical energy in the power-starved areas of the world.
The speech drew thunderous applause. Even the Russians approved. Still, some from both camps worried that civilian and military uses of the technology could never be separated. Eisenhower's speech never contained the terms Atoms for Peace, but everyone referred to it that way, and Eisenhower's speechwriter C.D. Jackson realized he had a slogan. He circulated hundreds of thousands of pamphlets extolling the virtues of an Atoms for Peace program, and it got results. Again, Leonard Weiss.
Congress, which was totally ignorant about nuclear energy, essentially went to the White House and said, okay, we're getting these demands from our constituents. Tell us about the program. Well, there was no program.
Peaceful uses were still largely theoretical. So the government kick-started research and helped industry build power reactors. The once secretive Atomic Energy Commission became a booster with radio announcements and educational films.
To perform a multitude of peaceful tasks for the betterment of mankind, man is exploring a source of enormous, potentially useful energy, the nuclear explosion.
Yes, the atom could destroy, but it could heal as well.
One of man's most awesome problems down through the years has been the fight against cancer. Radiation, in many forms, has been used not only to detect the disease in the first place, but also to treat it. We are visiting the AEC.
While many nuclear schemes proved to be a fantasy, the civilian industry did flourish. Eisenhower's grand scheme to slow the arms race did not, however. Neither the Soviets nor the U.S. government liked the idea of giving up its uranium to an international bank. What Atoms for Peace evolved into was a domestic campaign for nuclear power and an international export program designed to win friends and influence people. Matthew Bunn is a nuclear proliferation expert at Harvard University.
In general, there was an effort on the part of both the United States and the Soviet Union to make their own camp appear to be the one that was leading technologically, that was going to economically outcompete the other, and that was going to be sort of the side to be on.
The big flaw was selling reactors for research and electricity to all comers also meant anyone could acquire the tools and materials to make bombs. The United Nations organized the International Atomic Energy Agency in 1957 to keep civilian and military uses from mixing, but the system was leaky.
Pretty much every nuclear weapons program that has been launched since nuclear energy became widely established as a result of Atoms for Peace has had some kind of significant input from the civilian nuclear energy sector.
Sometimes civilian reactors or enrichment plants for making fuel were diverted to make weapons-grade uranium or plutonium, or engineers ostensibly trained for the civilian sector actually worked on bombs. The IAEA got help in 1968 when the Nuclear Nonproliferation Treaty required non-weapon states to promise not to acquire them in return for civilian technology. But it came too late. NPR broadcast this report in 1974.
Over the weekend, India became the sixth nation in the world to set off a nuclear bomb. A delegation of survivors of the first nuclear blast at Hiroshima is protesting the spread of nuclear capability to yet another country.
Pakistan and Israel followed with their own bomb programs. Atoms for Peace had started as an arms control plan and had the opposite effect. Proliferation analyst Leonard Weiss.
Well, I don't think there's any doubt about the fact that it accelerated proliferation because if not for the Atoms for Peace program as it developed, it probably would have taken the Indians longer to explode their device, which meant that the Pakistani program would have been delayed. And I think the Israeli program was helped by information which they obtained as a result of the Atoms for Peace program.
On the other hand, Weiss and Bunn point out that Atoms for Peace also created the IAEA and the Nonproliferation Treaty. Were it not for them, the eight or possibly nine countries now thought to have the bomb might number even higher. Christopher Joyce, NPR News.